and welcome to the reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Friday, February 19th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. Our first article on the front page, Winnebago Workers Give Grassley Grand Tour by Rob Hillsand, Summit Tribune. Winnebago Industries Advanced Assembler Trisha Traeger had a lighthearted conversation with Senator Chuck Grassley on Thursday, saying she could hook him up with a good recreational vehicle. Plant workers in Forest City were greeted by the Iowa Republican senator, who walked nearly the length of one of the main motorhome production lines and discussed operations with Winnebago employees. Quote, we're building them at top of the line, really good quality here, Traeger said. I asked him if he owned a Winnebago, we could build one for him right now, end quote. Winnebago General Manager of Manufacturing Operations Richard Hanzi walked the line three assembly line with Grassley, answering his many questions and providing information about production processes. Grassley observed motorhome side wall and compartment door installations, as well as a highly automated roof installation process during the 20-plus minute tour. Winnebago Director of Corporate Relations Chad Reese showed and discussed various forms of face shields, masks, and other PPE that workers have used during the COVID-19 pandemic. Then Grassley signed a large table-length banner commemorating his visit. He answered employee questions for nearly an hour after the tour and media questions after that. Merle Anrud, who works in the ship out department and has been a Winnebago employee for the better part of four decades, shared photos and a conversation with Grassley. He said his specialty is doing final work on the units before they go to the dealer. Quote, he's been here 37 years and lots of you have worked here for a very long time, but I see some young people as well, said Grassley. For 26 years, I brought ambassadors on tours of Iowa for a week. Winnebago was one of those stops. I always remember John K. Hansen, who headed Winnebago. He was the only millionaire that ever fried eggs for me, end quote. Grassley said he likes to go to industries such as Winnebago to interact with people he does not always see and hear their questions and concerns and perspectives on vital issues. Discussions included the Renewable Fuel Standard, RFS, ethanol use, COVID-19 vaccinations, unemployment and minimum wage, broadband access, rural housing, protecting the Second Amendment, and much more. With multiple questions about the RFS, Grassley said he recently communicated with President Joe Biden's Environmental Protection Agency director about the RFS, and the implication was that it will remain a priority. Grassley cited the many Iowa farmers depending upon the ethanol fuel market. Our next front page article, Mason City Approves Tax Abatement for 42 Properties. By Jared McNett, Globe Gazette. Following Tuesday night's meeting of the Mason City Council, several dozen properties in town can expect to be exempt from new property tax payments for as long as a decade. The council unanimously approved 42 applications for tax abatements through, quote, Mason City's Urban Revitalization Tax Abatement Program, end quote, which allows people who have a property within, quote, urban revitalization area, end quote, to apply based on increased value that's come through improvements to that property. In the latest round, the property applications added up to $32,054,684 in investment. More than $13 million of that is claimed by the new 133-unit residential development, The River, which had its ribbon-cutting ceremony in January. An additional $14.94 million comes from seven commercial applicants, including the Quick Star locations on South Federal Avenue and 4th Street Southwest, which total $5.8 million. The largest number of applicants are residential applicants, though their investment amount is the lowest at about $3.44 million. When discussing the item, 4th Ward Council Member John Jaworski asked City Administrator Aaron Burnett about the duration of the particular abatement for The River. Quote, the 10-year tax abatement is extended to River Apartments to drive density to downtown, and quote, Burnett said before informing Jaworski that the property would fully go on to the city's tax rolls in year 11 and produce a, quote, sizable tax revenue, end quote. tax levies. Abatements weren't the only tax matter to come before the council on Tuesday night. The four members present also signed off on setting a hearing date of March 2nd to discuss setting the minimum maximum property tax dollars for the coming fiscal year. According to City Finance Director Kevin Jacobson, an increased tax levy of 3.58% from year to year is expected, though he told at-large council member Paul Adams that this number won't be fully reflected in what taxpayers in Mason City actually see. In the council packet, Jacobson also included his monthly financial report about Mason City's cash basis. The budget for January 2021 was set at $1,146,451, while actual expenditures came under at $1,029,608. One of the larger expenditures over budget was 25.64% overage in general capital improvements due to purchasing computer equipment and a 31.91% overage in cemetery capital projects to purchase a funeral tent. Jacobson later notes that funds from parking and multipurpose arena are, quote, considerably behind, end quote, and will need, quote, a general fund transfer before year end to bring them back in line, end quote. Based on the numbers included in the packet, general fund reserves through the end of January are $8,960,800. Electrical matters. Along with the tax levy hearing, the council also signed off on it setting March 2 as the date to discuss purchase agreements with the Iowa Department of Public Transportation for its, quote, primary road Iowa number 122, end quote, reconstruction project between Monroe Avenue and Carolina Avenue. City engineer Mark Ram wrote in a memo to Burnett that, quote, two locations were identified as requiring additional acquisition from the city, end quote. Specifically, the land is needed for electrical matters that relate to running nearby traffic signs and street lighting. Hotel update. Near the start of Tuesday night's meeting, at-large Councilmember Tom Thoma asked Burnett about where things stood with the long-running downtown hotel development project and when residents might expect to see construction begin. Burnett told Thoma that he didn't want to get into the predictions game, but felt confident that enough work is happening, such as agreement modifications necessitated by COVID, that tangible forward progress will be made in 2021. Quote, one of the strongest indications that the project is moving forward is that we're looking at things like surveys and environmental studies, Burnett said. We're hitting that home stretch, end quote. Our last front page article, vaccine registration info ready for Worth County. Public health officials answer questions about new shots, by Jared McNett, Globe Gazette. Thursday morning, Worth County public health nurse Jill Schutz went through what's become somewhat of a routine in the time since the COVID-19 vaccine has become available to certain members of the general public. After welcoming Iowa residents 65 and older to a room segmented with plastic dividers, Schutz fills out paperwork at a prep station before getting either a primary or boost dose of Moderna vaccine ready. She then takes the patient behind a standard office partition and delivers the needed dosage. When the residents go back to a seat between one of the plastic dividers to wait 15 minutes before heading out again, if they need to keep time, there's a big screen TV with a giant clock on it to help. In the midst of her work, Schutz took some time out to answer some of the most common questions area residents have had about the COVID-19 vaccination. So, to this point, how many vaccinations has the Worth County Public Health Department done? Schutz says, up to this, as of today, Thursday, once we are finished today, we've given a total of 749. Question, are you all happy with the progress you've made to this point? Answer, I would say we're happy, but I think we all wish we could get through our 65 and older age group a bit faster. Question, what's the process for registering for the vaccine in Worth County? Answer, what we did starting January 25th, we started taking calls for the phase two. People call in, get their name put on a list, and we merge all the lists once they call. Then when we get vaccine in, we will go down our list in order of people when people called, and we'll call them back and get them scheduled for a clinic. Question, when are registration days? Answer, we don't have a set day. As soon as we know we have our 100 doses in hand, then we can call and usually schedule the clinic for the next day. It just depends, but we will get them all used up in a week. Question, any issues with meeting the state's usage thresholds? Answer, nope, we won't have any problem at all. We are going through the 100 doses easily. Question, have there been frustrations working with the state on this? Answer, at first there was frustration, but it seems to be better now. Question, will public health do in-person registrations? Answer, we're planning on sticking with phone calls. We do have people stop in and say they want to be put on a list, but we prefer that they call. Question, is someone able to register for a spouse or family member when they register for themselves? Answer, yes, we let them do that. Question, does someone have to be a resident of the county to get a vaccination in the county? Answer, no, they do not. We would like them to try their own county first, but they do not have to be a resident of Worth County. COVID-19 numbers. According to the most recent data from the Iowa Department of Public Health, Worth County's positive testing rate for the past 14 days is 6%. Over the course of the pandemic, Worth has had 649 positive cases. Four people have died with the virus. Statewide, there have been 5,321 deaths related to COVID-19. The total for positive cases across Iowa as of Thursday sits at more than 331,000. Moving to page A3 for the local and state section, U.S. Representative Hinson takes in Osage and Northwood, lawmaker emphasizing workforce and immigration reform, by Jason W. Selby, Press News. U.S. Representative Ashley Hinson was in Osage on Thursday to get a feel for the business environment and a taste of the local cuisine. Iowa's first congressional district representative made stops at local businesses in Osage and Northwood. In Osage, Hinson toured Fox River Mills, America's oldest performance sock manufacturer. She also stopped for lunch at Taste on Main Street. Hinson said she was impressed with how the Fox River Mills is merging generations of workers together. The conversation there centered around the issue of workforce. Quote, that's definitely the common theme, Hinson said. Just seeing the dedication their employees have, they've seen a challenge in it the last year with the pandemic. I heard from them that the PPP was essential for them to continue operations and stay open, end quote. According to U.S. Small Business Administration, the Paycheck Protection Program provides loans to help businesses keep their workforce employed during the COVID-19 crisis. In Northwood, Hinson visited ADA Enterprises, a family-owned manufacturer of a plasticol-coated animal flooring. Quote, I was impressed with not only all the products they make and the operation in general, but how they're looking to really expand their e-commerce business and continue to look for new markets for their products, end quote, Hinson said of ADA. Quote, last year was a challenging year for a lot of people. They were not exempt from that. At the same time, hearing the ways that they're trying to innovate and to get new orders and continue to take care of their workforce was great to hear, end quote. Hinson left with action items such as workforce and immigration reform. She believes traveling throughout her district is crucial. Quote, I wanted to make it a priority to get out to all 20 counties in the district as soon as I could after being sworn into office, Hinson said. I need to have that real-world feedback from my constituents, which I will take back to Washington, D.C., end quote. Hinson believes that there is a synergy between workforce issues and immigration reform. Quote, a lot of what we talked about was looking at internship programs, Hinson, end quote. Hinson said of a recent town hall meeting. Quote, looking at the guest worker visa programs and how we can improve those. Childcare access and affordability is something that continues to be the theme no matter where I go. We need to make sure we're looking at smart policies for economic development. I heard overwhelmingly that a $15 minimum wage would kill small businesses in rural Iowa, end quote. Hinson said she is vocal about her opposition to a $15 an hour minimum wage and that traveling throughout her district has only confirmed her beliefs. Our next article, Texas outages fall, but water woes persist, by Paul J. Weber and Jill Bleed, Associated Press, Austin, Texas. Power was restored to more homes and businesses in Texas on Thursday after a deadly blast of winter this week overwhelmed the electrical grid and left millions shivering in the cold. But the crisis was far from over, with many people still in need of safe drinking water. Fewer than a half a million homes remained without electricity, although utility officials said limited rolling out blackouts could still occur. The storms also left more than 320,000 homes and businesses without power in Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama. About 70,000 power outages persisted after an ice storm in eastern Kentucky, while nearly 67,000 were without electricity in West Virginia. Snow and ice moved into the Appalachians, northern Maryland, and southern Pennsylvania, and later the Northeast. Back-to-back storms left 15 inches of snow in Little Rock, Arkansas, tying a 1918 record, the National Weather Service said. The extreme weather was blamed for the deaths of over three dozen people, some while trying to keep warm. In the Houston area, one family died from carbon monoxide as their car idled in their garage. A woman and her three grandchildren were killed in a fire that authorities said might have been caused by a fireplace they were using. In Texas on Thursday, just under 500,000 homes and businesses remained without power, down from about 3 million a day earlier. The state's grid manager, the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, said the remaining outages are largely weather-related rather than forced blackouts that began Monday to stabilize the power grid. Quote, "We will keep working around the clock until every single customer has their power back on," and quote, said ERCOT Senior Director of System Operations Dan Woodfin. Woodfin warned that rotating outages could return if electricity demand rises as people get power and heating back, though they wouldn't last as long as outages earlier this week. Adding to the state's misery, the weather jeopardized drinking water systems. Authorities ordered 7 million people, a quarter of the population of the nation's second largest state, to boil tap water before drinking it, following record low temperatures that damaged infrastructure and pipes. Water pressure fell after lines froze, and many people left faucets dripping to prevent pipes from icing over, said Toby Baker, executive director of the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. Governor Greg Abbott urged residents to shut off water to their homes, if possible, to prevent more busted pipes and preserve pressure in municipal systems. Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner said he expects that residents in the nation's fourth largest city will have to boil tap water before drinking it until Sunday or Monday. Some Austin hospitals lost water pressure and heat, but because the problem was statewide and affected other facilities, quote, no one hospital currently has the capacity to accept transport of a large number of patients, end quote, said David Huffstler, CEO of St. David's South Austin Medical Center. Two of Houston Methodist community hospitals had no running water but still treated patients, with most non-emergency surgeries and procedures canceled for Thursday and possibly Friday, and bursted pipes were repaired as they happened, said spokeswoman Gail Smith. Our next article, Deaths Highlight Avalanche Danger in Rocky Mountains, by James Anderson, Associated Press, Denver. The recent deaths of two Colorado men caught in avalanches and a third in Montana show how backcountry skiers and others in the Rocky Mountain wilderness risk triggering weak layers of snow that have created the most hazardous conditions in a decade, forecasters say. At least 25 people have died in avalanches in the United States so far this year, more than the 23 who died last winter. Typically, 27 people die in avalanches in the U.S. annually. Avalanche forecasters say they have rarely seen the danger as high as it is now, and it will grow as more snow moves into the Rockies, adding weight and stress on a weak, granular base layer of snow that's susceptible to breaking apart and triggering especially wide slides on steep slopes. The main culprit is that ground layer of snow that dropped in October. A dry November weekend, which is anywhere from several inches to several feet thick, and despite more snow falling, it's stayed the consistency of granular sugar, said Dave Zinn, an avalanche forecaster for the Gallatin National Forest Avalanche Center in southwestern Montana. Quote, that layer consists of large, sugary crystals that don't bond together well. It's impossible to make a snowball from it, and when it becomes weighted down, it becomes fragile and breaks, and, quote, bringing it down the heavier layers on top of it, Zinn said. Quote, it's the weakest link in the chain. When you pile on more snow, there's always one spot that's going to break, end quote, said Ethan Green, director of the Colorado Avalanche Information Center. On February 14th, backcountry skier Craig Keto, 45, of Bozeman, Montana, was fatally injured when the forecast forest slope he and a companion were climbing cracked without warning, collapsed, and swept him downhill into a tree. The other person was not hurt. Similar conditions may have led to the death of 57-year-old David Hyde, a backcountry skier whose body was found in an avalanche debris field February 14th in central Colorado's Clear Creek County. In neighboring Grand County, an avalanche carried a snowmobiler onto a frozen lake Sunday, and his body was found buried in snow. A coroner is investigating. On February 6, Utah saw its deadliest avalanche in about 30 years when four Buck County skiers in their 20s died, and another four dug themselves out of a 1,000-foot slide east of Salt Lake City. Several factors are at play in the rash of deaths. The snowpack, which can be affected by windstorms, shifting and piling snow atop weak layers, weather conditions that can change rapidly in the high altitudes of the Rockies, and the availability of public lands in the U.S. West, where people often take advantage of easily accessible national forests. In contrast, ski areas have long ensured their slopes are groomed, potential avalanches in their areas are triggered, and nearby backcountry areas are closed before the first customers hit the lift lines. It's not uncommon for skiers at Colorado's Loveland ski area to hear an occasional howitzer targeting danger-prone areas on wind-blown peaks approaching 13,000 feet along the Continental Divide. Quote, the ski patrols do lots of work to mitigate hazards, Zinn said, but in the backcountry, we have to be our own avalanche experts, end quote. Avalanche centers in Colorado, Montana, and Utah, as well as the U.S. Forest Service National Avalanche Center, issue daily advisories on conditions and risk levels, as well as safety and training resources. Colorado Governor Jared Polis and the State Parks and Wildlife Agency urged residents to check conditions this holiday weekend, citing the high danger. The Colorado Avalanche Information Center recently issued a special advisory warning that, quote, large, wide, and long-running natural and human-triggered avalanches are likely, end quote. Are people getting the message? Quote, that's a hard one to answer, end quote, Green acknowledged on February 15th. Quote, yesterday was tragic, a horrible thing. We don't know how many got the messages and pursued some other type of recreation. We don't know how many made it out safely, end quote. Forecasters emphasize standard precautions before heading into the backcountry. Have rescue gear, a beacon, a probe to check snow conditions, a shovel, know how to use them. Check a daily forecast. Keep an eye out for recent avalanche activity. Take a guided tour. Don't do it alone if possible. Make sure only one person in your party is exposed to terrain at any given time. Quote, the bottom line is that partner rescue is the only way we have positive outcomes in the backcountry, end quote, Zinn said. Record cold temperatures in much of the Rockies, quote, reduce your margin for error, end quote, Zinn added. Quote, if you have an accident, minor injuries become serious ones, and serious ones become deadly with the compounding factor of hypothermia, end quote. Green said that while there's adventure in the wildest parts of public lands, quote, having the freedom to go where you want comes the responsibility of taking care of yourself, end quote. Our next article, Cruz Confirms Mexican Vacation After Storm Hit Texas, by Steve Peoples and Jake Bielberg, Associated Press, Dallas. Texas Senator Ted Cruz acknowledged Thursday that he had traveled to Mexico for a family vacation this week, leaving his home state as thousands of constituents struggled without power or safe drinking water from a powerful winter storm. The high-profile Republican, a potential White House candidate in 2024, said in a statement that he had accompanied his family after his daughters asked to go on a trip with friends, given that school was canceled for the week. Quote, wanting to be a good dad, I flew down with them last night and I am flying back this afternoon, end quote, Cruz said after media outlets had reported details of the trip. Quote, my staff and I are in constant communications with state and local leaders to get to the bottom of what has happened in Texas, Cruz said. We want our power back, our water on, and our homes warm, end quote. The revelation drew immediate criticism from Democrats and Republicans in Texas and beyond as Cruz, a key ally of former President Donald Trump contemplates the possibility of a second presidential run. The two-term senator's current term expires in early 2025. Quote, that's something that he has to answer to his constituents about, and quote, State Republican Party Chairman Alan West said when asked whether Cruz's travel was appropriate while Texans are without power and water. Quote, I'm here trying to take care of my family and look after my friends and others that are still without power, West said. That's my focus, end quote. Hundreds of thousands of people in Texas woke up Thursday to a fourth day without power, and a water crisis was unfolding after winter storms wreaked havoc on the state's power grid and utilities. Moving to the obituaries, Frances Menenga, M-E-N-N-E-N-G-A, February 17, 1921 to February 13, 2021, Belmont, Iowa. Frances Menenga, age 99, of Belmont, Iowa, died Saturday, February 13, 2021 at the Iowa Specialty Hospital, Clarion, Iowa, 4 days short of her 100th birthday. Funeral services will be Saturday, February 20, 2021 at the Belmont United Church of Christ Congregational at 1 p.m. Pastor David Bugard will be officiating. Burial will be in the Cedar Cemetery, Fonda, Iowa. Public visitation will be held at the church on Saturday from 11:30 a.m. until 1 p.m. Public funeral services will be live streamed for those unable to attend on the Andrews Funeral Home Facebook page. Just go to the page and like it to view the funeral services. Those attending the visitation and or funeral service are encouraged to wear a mask. There will be some limitations on seating due to social distancing. Andrews Funeral Home, Belmont, Iowa, www.andrewsfuneralhomeandfloral.com, 641-444-4474. Frances Marcella Herkey, the daughter of Otto and Florence Carlson Herkey, was born February 17, 1921 in Fonda, Iowa. She was confirmed at the United Church of Christ in Fonda, Iowa. Frances attended Pocahontas County Country Schools for 8 years and then attended Fonda High School, from which she graduated. Frances was united in marriage to Lyle White, and they made their home in the Fonda area, where Frances was employed as the school secretary for Fonda schools from 1956 to July of 1965. Lyle had been in the plumbing profession during their years there. The couple eventually moved to Belmont, where Lyle went to work for Kenneth's Plumbing and did plumbing work for the Winnebago Industries. Frances went to work for Tomco Seed Company and then Acco Seed Companies in November 1965. She then was employed for Cargill Incorporated as personnel manager and payroll clerk until her retirement in May 1986. Lyle preceded Frances in death on March 3, 1976. After several years of widowhood, Frances married Louis Menenga on March 14, 1986 at the United Church of Christ in Belmont, where they had met. The couple enjoyed over 27 years together. They shared many memories, many years of traveling and sharing time with one another's family. Travel destinations included many parts of the eastern U.S., Maine, Washington, D.C., California, and Alaska. Frances had a strong faith throughout her entire life, commencing in Fonda at the UCC church there, and then after transferring her membership to the Belmont United Church. She loved to share her faith life with others and relished every opportunity she could to share stories about her family with others. She never had her own children, but adopted the rest of her family members as if they were her own. All who knew her will remember her as a lady of strong beliefs with a straightforward mannerism, yet a gentleness in her own character. Frances and Louis had enjoyed a little gambling and excursions to the dog races. She always was up for the competition of card games such as 31 or the challenges of Jenga and Rummikube. Frances had a fondness for collecting elephants, which most likely flourished from her memories of attending the circus as a child with her grandpa. She also collected teacups and recipes. She was an excellent cook and baker and looked forward to getting together for family dinners and gathering over the years. She was a wonderful seamstress and had terrific handwriting. Frances always kept track of special occasion in people's lives and remembered them by sending cards and letters. Her memory was amazing, and as a recent as a week before her 100th birthday, she shared that she had many great life chapters with both her husbands, Whitey and Lewis. Her survivors include many nieces and nephews and other extended family and friends. Some of the more immediate family includes a niece, Carol Hussey, a great-niece, Kimberly Corrin, Storm Lake, Iowa, and great-great-nieces and nephews, Crystal Spray, Cedar Falls, Iowa, Karen Sievers, Nashville, Tennessee, Connor Sievers, Lamars, Iowa, and Joshua Corrin, Des Moines, Iowa, and Marcia Hofford of Storm Lake, Iowa, along with other family members from both of Francis's marriages, including her stepchildren from Lewis, Sandra, spouse Glenn Sellers, and Lorinda, spouse John Herman, and step-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her sisters, Lois Herkey and Beulah Telfer, her grandparents, John Herkey and Sophia Carlson, her parents, Otto and Florence Herkey, her husband, Lyle, known as Whitey White, in 1976, and Lewis Meninga in 2014, nephew Delbert Sievers, her great-nephew Paul Sievers, and stepson Dwight Meninga. Andrew's funeral home, 641-444-4474. Arthur Henry Kelvig, April 3rd, 1928 to February 16th, 2021, Northwood. Arthur Henry Kelvig, 92 of Northwood, passed away peacefully Tuesday, February 16th, 2021 at the IOOF home in Mason City. Funeral services will be held 1 p.m. Sunday, February 21, 2021 at Connor Colonial Chapel, 1008 First Avenue South, Northwood, Iowa, 50459. With Reverend Becky Soag of First Lutheran Church officiating. He will be laid to rest beside his wife at the South Shell Rock Cemetery, Northwood, Iowa. Visitation and public viewing will be 1 hour prior to the funeral service at the chapel. Arthur Henry Kelvig was born April 3, 1928, near Manly, Iowa, the son of Vern and Marie Thiel Kelvig. On December 6, 1947, he married the love of his life, Frances Catherine Brown. To this union, 3 children were born, Harold, Linda, and William. For many years, Francis and Art moved around the state, following Art's job as a mechanical draftsman. Finally, the family settled alongside the Shell Rock River in a house built by Art himself in 1974. He enjoyed putting together puzzles and working with his hands. On a warm day, Art and Francis could often be found enjoying their porch, admiring the wildlife and river. Those left to cherish his memory are his sons, Harold, spouse Kate Kelvig of Glenville, Minnesota, and Bill, fiancé Mary Kelvig of Wyckoff, Minnesota. Grandchildren, Rusty, spouse Russ Kelvig, Chad, spouse Jana Estelle, Katina, spouse Randy Throned, Nicholas Kelvig, Heather Praska, 16 great-grandchildren, 6 great-great-grandchildren, sisters Verna Weitzel and Dorothy Schoolcraft, sisters-in-law Shirley Kelvig and Carolyn Kelvig, as well as numerous nieces, nephews, and extended family members. Preceding him in death are his parents, a daughter, Linda, and her husband, Larry Brown, a grandson, Mike Kelvig, his brothers, Carl, Merle, Elmer, David, Donald, and Raymond, a sister, Rachel, and a brother-in-law, Joe Brown, as well as extended family members. Connor Colonial Chapel, 1008 First Avenue South, Northwood, Iowa, 50459. Phone number 641-324-1543, colonialchapels.com. Armand Claire Sharper. Armand Claire Sharper, 70, of Plymouth, died Wednesday, February 17, 2021, at the University of Iowa Hospital in Iowa City. A memorial service will be held at 3 p.m. on Saturday, February 20, 2021, at Champion Funeral Home, Osage, with Reverend Brian O'Dean officiating. Champion Funeral Home, Osage, 641-732-3706, www.schroederfuneralhomes.com. Joseph H. Herrera, Mason City. Joseph H. Herrera, 84, of Mason City, passed away on Wednesday, February 17, 2021, at his home. Services are currently pending at Major Erickson Funeral Home. Online condolences may be left for the family at www.majorericksonfuneralhome.com. Arrangements are with Major Erickson Funeral Home and Crematory, 111 North Pennsylvania Avenue, Mason City, Iowa, 50401, 641-423-0922. 1924, www.majorericksonfuneralhome.com. Larry L. Wright, Northwood. Larry L. Wright, 78, of Northwood, passed away on Wednesday, February 17, 2021, in Fort Myers, Florida. Arrangements are pending with Connor Colonial Chapel. Connor Colonial Chapel, 1008 First Avenue South, Northwood, Iowa, 50459. Phone number 641-324-1543, colonialchapels.com. Robert Reeder, Northwood. Robert Reeder, 74, of Northwood, died Thursday, February 18, 2021, at Mayo Clinic Hospital in Rochester, Minnesota. Funeral arrangements are pending with Connor Colonial Chapel, 1008 First Avenue South, Northwood. Phone number 641-324-1543, colonialchapels.com. Doug Penning. Doug Penning, 68, of Buffalo Center, passed away peacefully Wednesday, February 17, 2021, at his home surrounded by family. A funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. on Saturday at Ramsey Reformed Church in rural Titicaca. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. on Friday at Oak Crest Funeral Services, Winter Chapel, Buffalo Center. The funeral and graveside services were live-streamed and on Oak Crest Funeral Services' Facebook page, www.oakcrestfuneralservices.com. Moving to the sports page, prep roundup, Clear Lake girls move on. Lions playing for a chance to go to state, by Gunnar Davis, Globe Gazette. For the Clear Lake girls basketball team, the last couple of weeks have been a roller coaster ride. COVID-19 forced some of the Lions to sit out of their first round game, with everyone back and available for the Class 3A Region 4 semifinal game on Wednesday night against Iowa Falls Alden. Clear Lake was ready to roll at home. The Class 3A number 2 Clear Lake basketball team looked solid against the Iowa Falls Alden. The Lions beat the Cadets 54-41 to advance to the regional championship. The game was close through the majority of the first half. The Lions held a 6-point advantage at halftime, but Clear Lake's solid third quarter was enough to separate the team and earn a win. Senior Caitlin Vanderploeg led the Lions with 18 points, while junior Jaden Ainley finished with 13 points. Clear Lake improved to an overall record of 17-1 and play Williamsburg at 7 p.m. on Saturday at Grundy Center. Girls basketball, OCH 67, New Hampton 42. A dominant third quarter pushed the Class 3A number 6 OCH girls basketball team over New Hampton in Class 3A Region 5 semifinal action. The Green Devils beat the Chickasaws 67-42 to advance to the regional championship. The Green Devils led by 12 points at halftime but extended the lead by 12 more points after the third quarter. OCH was led by senior Daniel Johnson, who scored 21 points and grabbed 9 rebounds. Sophomore Claudia Ashenbrenner, junior Cabri Sullivan, and senior Ellie Bobinette each scored over double digits as well. OCH improved to 21-2 and play WooCon at 7 p.m. on Saturday at Waverly Shell Rock. Esterville Lincoln Central 60, Forest City 48. The Forest City girls basketball team gave Esterville Lincoln Central a run for its money on Wednesday night, but came up short in Class 3A Region 2 semifinal action. The Midgets beat the Indians 60-48 to put an end to Forest City's season. The Midgets led by 1 point and slowly increased their lead after every quarter. There were no additional stats available on Varsity Bound for Forest City. The Indians finished their season with an overall record of 16-8. Bowling. For the first time ever in Forest City bowling history, both the boys and the girls team qualified for the state tournament. The girls team beat 6 other teams at districts with a total score of 2,678. The boys team was also able to qualify. Jordan Trunkhill bowled a 299 at the meet, the highest ever for the Indians. Our next sports article, Callahasin, we continue to get better. Battle-tested Mohawk girls ready for next round matchup, by Gunnar Davis, Globe Gazette. Every year, the Mason City girls basketball team has to play through a regular season gauntlet that no team in the state of Iowa would envy. This winter was no different. Mason City plays in the Central Iowa Metro League, Iowa, a conference loaded with ranked Class 5A teams. To start the season, the Class 4A Mohawks played 5 ranked teams in the first 8 games, which reflected on their record. After starting out the season at 0-8, the young Mohawks have pulled it together to win 7 of their last 11 games, including a 54-37 postseason victory over Charles City on Wednesday night in the Class 4A Region 2 quarterfinals. Quote, "I think we've found who we are and what we can do," and quote, Mason City head coach Kurt Callison said, quote, "We continue to get better. Our defense has gotten a lot better," end quote. Defense was an important part of the win over Charles City, especially in the first 16 minutes. The Mohawks held the Comets to just 2 points in the first quarter and 11 points at the half. Part of the reason for the defense success is due to the team fully understanding their roles and settling into them during the second half of the season. 4 of the team's top 8 players are freshmen, which would be a challenge for any team, but playing against top-tier teams in larger schools at the beginning of the season, it definitely made things tougher. Quote, "You always worry, especially with the young team, that when you're playing top-notch competition every night, that it doesn't beat them down," Callison said. "That it's not, gosh, we're not that good," end quote. Luckily for Callison, his team has been the type of team that responds to adversity. Junior Division 1 basketball commit Jada Williams and breakout freshman Reggie Spots have been the go-to players when needed. Both average close to 16 points per game and have been the backbone for the Mohawks. To Williams, it's just been as fun for her to see young players like freshman Amy McDonoghue and sophomore Jana Braun succeed as it is to play well by herself. The success of the past months has her feeling confident that the squad can keep its momentum going. Quote, "We're ready to go. We've been preparing since the first game," Williams said. "We play against the top teams in the state. I feel really confident about what we can do and what we're going to accomplish in their long run," end quote. But the next game will be a bigger challenge than the last. The Mohawks travel to play second-ranked Ballard in the regional semifinal. The Bombers are 19-1 and finished as Raccoon River Conference champions this winter. But playing top-quality opponents isn't anything new to Mason City. If the Mohawks are to beat the Bombers on Saturday, playing good defense and playing with confidence is required. Quote, "We know we're playing a really quality team, but we've played quality teams all year," Callison said. "We've just got to rise to the challenge, play well, and execute well. There's not going to be any gift wins. We're going to have to earn it, and that's the way you want it," end quote. The Mohawks play at 7 p.m. on Saturday at Ballard for a chance to advance to the regional championship. And our last sports article, Prep State Wrestling, North Iowa Wrestlers Advance. Lucky 13 move on to Class 1A quarterfinals, Shane Lance Globe Gazette. For North Iowa's Class 1A wrestling teams, 13 proved to be the lucky number on the first day of the state wrestling tournament. A wild weekend in Des Moines kicked off on Thursday morning at the Iowa High School State Wrestling Tournament as grapplers from all over the state began their pursuit of a state championship. At the end of the Class 1A session, 13 North Iowa wrestlers punched their ticket to Friday's state quarterfinal round. Number 1 ranked West Fork sophomore Kale Peterson got the day started at 106 pounds with a quick win by fall over Southeast Warren sophomore Rylan Jimenez to advance to the state quarterfinals. Peterson pinned Jimenez at 106 mark of the first period. At 120 pounds, West Hancock freshman Kellen Smith advanced on a 12-1 win against Ticey Ruffridge of Pocahontas area. Central Springs junior Clayton McDonoghue pushed his way through to the quarterfinals at 126 with a win by fall over Nick Schmidt of Beckman Catholic. The win puts McDonoghue's record at 53-0. The fun continued for the Panthers at 138 with a 9-1 major decision victory for Bryce McDonoghue as he advanced to the quarterfinals by beating Dalton Thorson of Lake Mills. The Bulldogs bounced back at 145 pounds with a pin victory by sophomore Alex Beatty over Max McGill of Woodbury Central. At 182 pounds, Bulldogs senior Elijah Wagner beat Iowa Valley junior Brody Hoyt by fall at 131 and will wrestle Midland junior Caden Miller in Friday's quarterfinals. Riceville saw one of its 2 wrestlers advance out of the first round as Lawson Lucy beat West Hancock junior Kane Zuhl by a 5-2 decision at 152 pounds. The other Wildcat competing at the Well, 285-pound Mitchell Marr, lost his first round match by fall and then beat Justin Rupnow with a quick pin in the consolation rounds. Three area wrestlers came out with first round wins at 160 pounds as Lake Mills senior Casey Hansen, West Hancock senior Briar Subject, and Northwood Kensett junior Drake Tiedemann all advanced to Friday's quarterfinal round. Subject's win came in overtime and ended with Subject taking an 8-6 sudden victory against Kale Cassidy of Martinsdale St. Mary's. Quote, he got behind early and ended up winning it in overtime, so that was a big win for him, and quote, West Hancock head coach Mark Singer said. Two more Eagles earned victories at the heavyweights in 195-pound junior Matthew Francis and 220-pound senior Cole Kelly. Francis beat South Hamilton senior Trevor Thompson 6-0 in the first round, while Kelly scored a 14-5 major decision win over Jaden Horde of South Central Calhoun. Kelly will face number 2 ranked Derek Anderson of Hinton on Friday in the quarterfinal round, and Francis will face number 6 ranked Cedric Yoder of Don Bosco. Quote, Matthew Francis wrestled the number 4 kid in the state and controlled the match the whole way, Sanger said. Cole Kelly got a big win as well, but they all have huge matchups in the second round. We've got some big matches tomorrow, end quote. After Kelly's win, 4 West Hancock wrestlers will wrestle in tomorrow's Class 1A quarterfinals. Quote, it's always good to get the first one under your belt and get the nerves out of the way, end quote, Sanger said. Quote, we'll take it, 4 out of 6, end quote. St. Axnar junior Sage Holsizer in his first career state tournament match beat Sam Vonahum of Interstate 35 by fall at 1 minute and 40 seconds to advance to the quarterfinals, where he will face Lisbon number 1 ranked senior Cole Clark. Several other area wrestlers competed in the consolation rounds after starting their day off with losses. West Hancock freshman Evan Boothroyd, 106-pound, lost to Brody Brisker of Hilton by technical fall in the first round, and then lost by fall to Moravia junior Dalton Irvin by fall in his consolation matchup. Quote, it was a good experience for him to be down there here, Sanger said. He'll understand some things he's got to improve on and hopefully get back next year and do a little bit better, end quote. In the 132-pound bracket, Central Springs junior Brock Mathers lost his first-round matchup to undefeated Hagen Heinstead of Logan Magnolia and then fell by a 15-6 major decision against Lisbon junior Quincy Happel. After his first-round loss to Bryce McDonahue, Dalton Thorson beat Matt Peters of Lawton Bronson in the 138-pound consolation round, 7-3. He will wrestle on Friday for a spot in the consolation quarterfinals. Lake Mills junior Brett Peterson and West Hancock junior Zane Zuhl both lost their first round matches at 152 pounds. Peterson bounced back by beating Al Burnett sophomore Gunnar Kenny, but Zuhl lost his next match by a 4-3 decision. Quote, two heartbreakers, end quote, Sanger said of Zuhl's day. Quote, losing both matches and he just couldn't pull them out in the end. He's a junior, so hopefully we can give him some motivation to get back next year. All in all, though, not a bad round, end quote. At 170 pounds, Central Springs senior Caden Jacobson lost a 7-4 first round decision to Colby Scott of MVAOCOU and then won his consolation match by fall in 42 seconds. The Class 3A first round started on Thursday at 1:30 p.m. and Class 2A will begin at 6 p.m. Check GlobeGazette.com for any updates throughout the day. Moving to the Nation and World section, Immigration Overhaul, Citizenship Path Offered by Bill proposes 8-year road to estimated 11 million living in U.S. illegally by Alexandra Hoffey, Associated Press, Washington. After decades of failed attempts to pass comprehensive immigration legislation, congressional Democrats and President Joe Biden are signaling an openness to a piece-by-piece approach. They unveiled a broad bill on Thursday that would provide an 8-year pathway to citizenship for 11 million people living in the country without legal status. There are other provisions too, but the Democrats are not talking all or nothing. Quote, even though I support full comprehensive immigration reform, I'm ready to move on piecemeal because I don't want to end up with good intentions on my hands and not have anything, end quote, said Texas Representative Henry Kuehler. Quote, I'd rather have process and progress, end quote. The pragmatic approach is a clear recognition of the past failures to deliver on a large-scale immigration overhaul and how success could be even more difficult in a highly polarized, closely divided Congress. The Democrats' legislation reflects the broad priorities for immigration changes that Biden laid out on his first day in office, including an increase in visas, more money to process asylum applications, new technology at the southern border, and funding for economic development in Latin American countries. But advocates for expansive immigration say they could pursue smaller bills focused on citizenship for groups such as young immigrants brought to the U.S. by their parents as children, for agricultural workers, and other essential labor. Quote, I know what it's like to lose on big bills and small bills. The fear that people have experienced in the last 4 years deserves every single opportunity, every single bill to remedy, end quote, said Grisa Martinez Rosas, executive director for United We Dream, an immigration advocacy group. Quote, the biggest thing here is that we're going to get something across the finish line, because not doing so is not an option, end quote. The broad legislation, which includes a pathway to citizenship, but not much in the way of the enhanced border security that's typically offered to win Republican votes, faces long odds with Democrats holding only a slender majority in Congress. Even before the new bill was unveiled, Democrats were reining in expectations for their final result. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Dick Durbin has said that any final Senate bill will likely, quote, will not reach the same levels, end quote, as Biden's proposal. The White House insisted Thursday there have been no decisions on strategy. Our next article, Mars mission, NASA rover lands on red planet. Crew at JPL celebrates. Goal is to return rockets as early as 2031, by Marcia Dunn, Associated Press, Cape Canaveral, Florida. A NASA rover streaked through the orange Martian sky and landed on the planet Thursday, accomplishing the riskiest step yet in an epic quest to bring back rockets that could answer whether life ever existed on Mars. Ground controllers at the space agency's Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California, leaped to their feet, thrust their arms in the air, and cheered in both triumph and relief on receiving confirmation that the six-wheeled Perseverance had touched down on the red planet, long a death trap for incoming spacecraft. Quote, now the amazing science starts, end quote, a jubilant Thomas Zurbuchen, NASA's science mission chief, said at a news conference. The landing marks the third visit to Mars in just over a week. Two spacecraft from the United Arab Emirates and China swung into orbit around Mars on successive days last week. All three missions lifted off in July to take advantage of the close alignment of Earth and Mars, journeying some 300 miles in nearly 7 months. Perseverance, the biggest, most advanced rover ever sent by NASA, became the ninth spacecraft since the 1970s to successfully land on Mars, every one of them from the United States. The car-sized plutonium-powered vehicle arrived at Jezero Carter, hitting NASA's smallest and trickiest target yet, a 5x4-mile strip on an ancient river delta full of pits, cliffs, and rocks. Scientists believe that if life ever flourished on Mars, it would have happened 3 billion to 4 billion years ago, when water still flowed on the planet. Over the next 2 years, Percy, as it's nicknamed, will use its 7-foot arm to drill down and collect rock samples containing possible signs of bygone microscopic life. 3 to 4 dozen chalk-sized samples will be sealed in tubes and set aside to be retrieved eventually by another rover and brought homeward by another rocket ship. The goal to get them back to Earth is as early as 2031. Scientists hope to answer one of the central questions of theology, philosophy, and space exploration. Quote, are we alone in this sort of vast cosmic desert, just flying through space, or is it much more common? Does it just emerge whenever and wherever the conditions are ripe? End quote, said Deputy Project Scientist Ken Willifred. Quote, we're really on the verge of being able to potentially answer these enormous questions, end quote. UN world needs to make changes. Report calls for fixes to tackle climate change, other crises, by Seth Bornstein, Associated Press. Humans are making Earth a broken and increasingly unlivable planet through climate change, biodiversity loss, and pollution. So the world must make dramatic changes to society, economics, and daily life, a new United Nations report says. Unlike past UN reports that focused on one issue and avoided telling leaders actions to take, Thursday's report combines three intertwined environment crises and tells them and tells the world that's got to change. It calls for changing what governments tax, how nations value economic output, how power is generated, the way people get around, fish and farm, as well as what they eat. Quote, without nature's help, we will not thrive or even survive, end quote, Secretary General Antonio Guterres said. Quote, for too long, we have been waging a senseless and suicidal war on nature. The result is three interlinked environmental crises, end quote. Among the report's conclusions, Earth is on the way to an additional 3.5 degrees warming from now, far more than the international agreed upon goals in the Paris Accord. About 9 million people a year die from pollution. About 1 million of Earth's 8 million species of plants and animals are threatened with extinction, and more than 3 billion people are affected by land degradation, and only 15% of Earth's wetlands remain intact. Our next article, U.S. ready to talk with Iran about nuke deal. Trump determination that sanctions restored has been reversed. Matthew Lee, Associated Press, Washington. The Biden administration said Thursday it's ready to join talks with Iran and world powers to discuss a return to the 2015 nuclear deal. It also reversed the Trump administration's determination that all U.N. sanctions against Iran had been restored and ease stringent restrictions on the domestic U.S. travel of Iranian diplomats posted on the United Nations. The State Department said the U.S. would accept an invitation from the European Union to attend a meeting of the participants in the original agreement. The U.S. has not participated in a meeting of those participants since former President Donald Trump withdrew from the deal in 2018. Quote, the United States would accept an invitation from the European Union High Representative to attend a meeting of the P5+1 in Iran to discuss a diplomatic way forward on Iran's nuclear program, end quote, State Department spokesman Ned Price said in a statement. Meanwhile, at the United Nations, the administration notified the Security Council that it had withdrawn Trump's September 2020 invocation of the so-called, quote, snapback, end quote, mechanism under which it maintained that all UN sanctions against Iran had been reimposed. That determination had been vigorously disputed by nearly all other UN members and had left US isolated at the world lobby. Body. Briefly, vaccines. Joe Biden will use his first big presidential moment of the global stage at Friday's Group of Seven meeting of world leaders to announce that the U.S. will soon start releasing $4 billion for an international effort to bolster the purchase and distribution of coronavirus vaccine to poor nations, White House officials said. Abortion ban. South Carolina's governor on Thursday signed a bill banning most abortions, one of his top priorities since he took office more than 4 years ago. Planned Parenthood immediately sued, effectively preventing the new law from taking place. Bob Dole. Bob Dole, a former longtime senator and the 1996 Republican presidential nominee, announced Thursday that he has been diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. Dole, who is 97 years old, said in a short statement that he was diagnosed recently and would begin treatment on Monday. Census. In a reversal of policy under then-President Donald Trump, Biden administration attorneys argued this week that the state of Alabama has no standing in trying to stop the U.S. Census Bureau from including people in the country illegally from the numbers used for divvying up congressional seats. Fatal crash. South Dakota's Republican Attorney General has been charged with misdemeanor careless driving after he struck and killed a man with his car, authorities said Thursday. Jason Ravensburg also faces misdemeanor charges of operating a motor vehicle while using a mobile electronic device and driving out of his lane. Navalny. The Kremlin on Thursday rejected the European Human Rights Court's order to release a jailed opposition leader Alexei Navalny as, quote, inadmissible, end quote, meddling in Russia's affairs. And that does it for today's reading of the Mason City Globe Gazette for Friday, February 19th on Iris. I'm your reader, Erin. You can access today's reading online at iowaradioreading.org. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you have a wonderful day.